Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. We talk about felines this hour, specifically Felis domesticus, the household cat. Beloved by millions as an alluring and endearing companion animal, it is at the same time loathed by some as a ruthless predator of songbirds and other small creatures. As a matter of fact, our guest for the first part of the hour says cats, both household and feral, are responsible for at least 33 extinctions around the world and the significant decline of over 140 other species. So what are the answers? Well, there is a divide among those who support cat eradication or culling programs and animal activists who favor options like trap, neuter, and spay, and we'll give both sides an opportunity to weigh in this hour, and we want to hear from you as well. 888-477-9499 is the number. You can send us an email at radiotimes at whyy.org. But first, we begin with Peter Mara, co-author of the book Cat Wars, The Devastating Consequences of a Cuddly Killer. Peter Mara is also author of dozens of scientific publications and directs the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center. Welcome to Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Mary.
So if you could, give us a sense of the number of cats here in the United States. It's simply enormous.
It is. So there are several different categories of cats. There are own cats that some stay inside, and some of those are let outside. There are about 60 to 70 to 80, 90 million of those. Most estimates say around 85 million. And about 60% of those are let outside. Then there are another group. Those are the ones that are just outside all the time, and they're unowned. And we think there's somewhere between 60 to 100 million, but there's a lot of variation on that, and we don't really know exactly.
Let's get a little bit of history. You say there's evidence that the relationship between cats and humans extends thousands of years. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we think cats became domesticated around 10,000 years ago, somewhere in the Fertile Crescent, Middle East, Asia, and they domesticated from a wild European wildcat, and they were thought to have come into areas where humans were first starting to build houses, store grain, water, and people either captured them and bred them, or over time more tame individuals came in and were fed, and those individuals bred and over time became domesticated. We don't really know, but what we do know is that cats quickly spread around the globe, and they're quite common.
So you actually call the house cat an invasive species?
It is. It's spread so rapidly that if their numbers are not kept in control, they spread with abandon. They reproduce multiple times in the year, individuals, and their numbers can grow exponentially. They're considered one of the top 100 worst invasive species on the planet. That's not my categorization. Yeah. That's categorization by others.
Well, Peter Mara, tell us a bit. Tell us the story of Stevens Island and the Stevens Island wren. You open your book by taking the reader to the late 19th century and Stevens Island, which is part of New Zealand. David Lyle signs on to be a lighthouse keeper, and as the story goes, he brings a cat, possibly named Tibbles, to Stevens Island.
That's right. So best thing is to put yourself back in the 1890s. No airplanes, no fax machines, no Facebook. The way we moved around the planet was by boat, usually a wooden boat. And because most islands and continents were surrounded by islands that had lots of rocks, there were usually shipwrecks, unless there were lighthouses. So countries, including New Zealand, would build lighthouses around harbors and things so sailors could arrive safely. And Stevens Island was one area where several hundred sailors had lost their lives. So the New Zealand Maritime Agency decided to put up a lighthouse and went out to this island. David Lyle was one individual. Yeah. And the story goes that he brought a cat.
And there were no cats on this island.
And there were no cats. There was thought was that nobody had ever been on that island before.
And so she comes to the island and she's pregnant, this kitty.
Yeah. Either she was pregnant or a couple cats came out. Mm-hmm. Not the details aren't clear. But what we do know is that cats brought in 15 specimens of a species that had never been seen before. And within a year or just over a year, there were no more of this species recovered
by the cat. So the Stevens Island wren is just gone.
The Stevens Island wren is extinct.
So Stevens Island was eventually cleared of cats, I think you write, in the 1920s. But the answer was to shoot them.
That's right.
That was the only way it was seen that the cat population could be controlled there?
That's right. They took 25 years to get cats off of the island.
Yeah. You write about, and we'll talk about different ways of controlling cat populations, but one of the sticking points, of course, with animal activists is, the concept of culling feral cat populations. Tell us a bit about how that is done and why some groups believe this is necessary.
Right. So just to be clear, we're not advocating for culling of cats or the complete eradication of cats. That's misinformation that was really put out there by the pro-cat lobby. What we're saying is that we need to prioritize where cats are and where they're removed. And in some cases, that might involve euthanasia.
Okay. Well, so tell us about why cats then are such a threat to local wildlife. And the reason I ask is, John Bradshaw is an anthrozoologist. I'm sure you're familiar with his work. He's the author of Cat Sense. He makes a distinction between the feral cat and the house cat, saying, for instance, pets are usually surplus killers. And I know we're not talking about the feral cat population for the moment, but how do cats hunt? What do they hunt? And do you make a distinction between these two populations, house cats and feral cats?
Sure. So a feral cat is, or feral anything, is just an animal that has no dependence on humans whatsoever. So a lot of the unowned cats we're talking about in the United States are truly not feral. They're just unowned, free-ranging animals. House cats that are owned and then let outside, either 24/7 or just during the day or just during the night, they don't kill as many birds and small mammals and reptiles as the unowned cats that do depend on wildlife for all of their caloric intake. So the predation rates can be much higher for those individual animals.
Well, I'm trying to get a sense of the damage that has been done to bird and other populations in the United States. Let's talk a little bit about Stanley Temple's studies regarding declining bird populations. You write about him in your book. He's a wildlife ecology professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. What did he find?
So he was one of the first people to really try to quantify the local scale impacts of cats. These were barn cats. And he did a local study and he found that cats were taking a significant number of birds. And when you look at the size of the bird populations, the percentage of birds they were taking was a significant amount of the mortality for those populations, actually more of the mortality than other natural causes. And that raised quite a bit of alarm. He then scaled it up across Wisconsin and looked at the number of total cats and came up with some pretty scary estimates for the number of birds killed per year just in the state of Wisconsin.
What were some of those estimates?
I can't recall the exact estimate for Wisconsin, right. But what I can tell you is we did a similar thing for the magnitude of mortality across the entire United States. Mm-hmm. And our conservative estimate put the number of birds killed by cats at 1.3 billion animals per year.
And what are some of the species that are gone? Has that been quantified? And I'm talking specifically within the United States.
So within the United States, there are no specific, within the continuous United States. There are no specific extinctions that I'm aware of from cats. Globally, there are now actually 63 species that cats have contributed to, primarily in islands, but also in Australia, which is, for the most part, a continent. And that's 63 species of reptiles, birds, and mammals. Now, that's not to say cats in the United States are not having population-level impacts. And there's lots of examples of solid research where cats are definitely impacting population size of birds.
Australia does have a culling program. Is it successful? And what does the program involve?
The program in Australia is geared towards truly feral cats. And they're using a variety of poisons and baits to try to get rid of 2 million cats that are out in the outback, really devastating bird populations and mammal populations.
So as these populations are being devastated still, what do you say to people who find this concept of culling difficult and even abhorrent?
It's a very hard situation. I totally understand it. You know, cats are widely loved as pets. I've owned cats in the past. I own pets. I totally understand. But cats, just like dogs, have to be cared for responsibly. And we've lost our way when it comes to cats. We need to try to get this back under control. And unfortunately, this means the sad reality of euthanasia, because it's not fair for the cats to be out there preying on birds and mammals that are native species. And so we really don't have much of a choice in some cases.
What about trap, neuter, and release? That is, taking care of cat colonies. That's one of the options advocated by animal activists.
So trap, neuter, return is another form of, in my opinion, abandonment. And we need to remember that when you put a cat back out in the environment, it's not good for the cat. There's enormous amount of evidence suggesting that when cats are placed back outside, they're put at risk. They're killed by coyotes. They're hit by cars. It's not a safe environment for the cats themselves. And many vets and animal ethicists would argue that a better alternative is to simply euthanize them. Not only that, but you need to remember that we're barely scratching the surface with the number of total cats that are out in the environment. If we have 60 million cats in the U.S., and I agree, that's a rough number.
Yeah.
But say we have 30 million cats in the environment. If we're only spaying maybe, a million of them a year, we're not even scratching the problem.
Yeah. All right, Peter Mara, we've got to hold on for a second. We're up against a break. Peter Mara is author of Cat Wars, The Devastating Consequences of a Cuddly Killer. And we've got lots of calls and comments coming in. We'll get to some of them in just a moment on Radio Times. Keep it here.
Is the engineer there?
You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. We are joined for the next 10 minutes or so by Peter Mara, who is author of Cat Wars, The Devastating Consequences of a Cuddly Killer. And the debate is really, how to work with cats, because they do kill certain populations, feral cats or even house cats that are left outside, birds, reptiles, small mammals. And what I'd like to do, Peter, is to jump to some comments and some questions really quickly while we've got you with us. We have an email from Nancy who asks, how does anyone know which birds are killed by cats? Birds are also killed by moving vehicles, other predators, including predatory birds, and disease.
So cats actually have this really interesting behavior where they bring a lot of their prey back into their owners. They'll bring them right back to a doorstop or bring them in the house. They also, you know, there's all sorts of ways that we can track cats and understand what they prey on. We have these things called kitty cams now. We can actually put them around their neck and track cats for 24 or 48 hours and record everything they do. So we can get some pretty good information on the actual mortality that cats impose on local populations.
Peter, as you mentioned at the top of the show, you're an author and you also direct the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center. So when, you know, obviously, I would guess you are a real bird lover. So when you see a bird that has been killed by a cat, what is your reaction?
I've had feral cats in my yard or outdoor unowned cats in my yard killing birds in my yard. And, you know, it's frustrating. And in that case, I captured the cat and I brought it to the local shelter. But, you know, I still see cats all over the neighborhoods, and it's frustrating. And I don't do anything with those individual cats other than try to educate people and how to deal with the situation. But, you know, I'm thinking about the big picture. So I work on habitat destruction. That's definitely the biggest issue out there. I work on disease issues. I was one of the first people to study the impacts of West Nile virus on bird populations. I'm looking at the big picture in many ways. And so I'm approaching this from the large scale. And so that's why I wrote the book, to try to influence and educate people with the data and the science about what's really happening with cats across the landscape. And so while I get frustrated at the local scale, I'm really trying to tackle this from the big picture.
Is culling a last resort option in your mind?
It is. There's no question. You know, in my mind, we have to tackle the real, highly sensitive wildlife areas and areas that are really important or really sensitive in terms of human health and disease transmission as well. Areas like Hawaii, Key Largo, Florida, Cape May, New Jersey, Jones Beach. Every state has areas that are really important for wildlife. And those areas should not have cats. They just shouldn't. And in those cases, if we can adopt out as many of those cats, wonderful. If there are places that can take them as part of a sanctuary, fantastic. And if they can't take, if we can't find homes for all those cats, then we have to resort to euthanasia. I do feel that in certain areas, as long as we manage the populations properly, that we can keep them outside. As long as they're having no impact whatsoever, the cats are vaccinated, they're trapped, they're tagged, we're keeping track of their mortality, and their populations are indeed declining, that because this problem is so huge, and we're not going to get to all the cats, that we probably have no choice but to tolerate those colonies of cats in those areas where they're not impacting wildlife.
All right, let's get to the telephones. Carolyn in Chester Springs, you are live with us on Radio Times. Hi, Carolyn.
Yeah, hi. I wrote some things down, so I remembered everything I'd like to say, but I would like to know why you're not talking more about who is really at fault here, and that is people. I am an animal rescue person who's been picking up abandoned cats for over 35 years. The problem is not the cats. The problem is people. Yeah. People abandon their cats, or they let their cats roam outside. Cats are not the predator. Cats are not only the predators. They are also victims because they were not taken care of responsibly. Trap, neuter, and release, when they are released by SPCAs, are only put back into situations where they are not guaranteed to be fed. They're not guaranteed to be given water or shelter. A Chester County SPCA humane officer told me that they, as an organization, the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, mm-hmm. do not make sure when they trap and neuter and release that upon release, the cats will be fed, given water and shelter, and taken care of.
Carolyn, we only have a couple moments more with Peter, so I'm going to have to stop you there, but some really interesting insights. First of all, when cats are let out, even if they're well-fed house cats, that doesn't matter because the hunting instinct takes over, correct? Peter?
That's correct. That is correct. And I agree with the previous caller, and we talk about this a lot in the book, that humans are the problem. I mean, humans ultimately have caused all these extinctions that we're seeing in this sixth mass extinction. And we've done this through a variety of ways, both through habitat destruction and things like cats and other invasive species. But we also have to take responsibility for this and try to minimize our footprint by minimizing things like habitat destruction and minimizing the invasive species that are exposed to things like sensitive wildlife areas. And pet abandonment is a huge issue. I completely agree.
Well, there is a school of thought which says, well, you know, they're cats. They can hunt. They can take care of themselves. And if they're out there and if I drop it off at a farm or, you know, in a wildlife area, the cat will be fine. How do you respond to that? Go ahead.
The cat will not be fine. I mean, some cats will. They'll obviously be okay. But there are others that will be killed by coyotes. Just the other day, I was interviewed by a writer who said that a good friend of theirs just told him the night before, two nights ago, their cat was killed by a coyote. Their cats get hit by cars. Their cats contract diseases. It's not safe for the cat. It just isn't. And it's not safe for the wildlife that's exposed to the cat. And the thing we need to remember is that cats are like cows and chickens and goats. They're domesticated species. They are not part of a native ecosystem anywhere. So when we put them there and we increase their densities to the degree that we do, they have horrible impacts. And that's not fair for our native ecosystems.
Peter Merritt, does declawing help?
To me, declawing is very inhumane, and it doesn't help with the problem at all. I don't think it helps.
We've got an email from Hayden who says, when I tell people I love cats, often they say they hate cats and the reason why. I want to defend my love of cats, but don't really know what to say. When people tell me they love dogs, I don't say mean things about dogs. Is there a way to reason with people, Hayden asks. And I'd like to just kind of follow that with something you wrote. You wrote, there's a conflict between cat advocates and bird advocates, a war quite literally to the death in the animal sense. Whether or not the cat lovers or the bird lovers will see it, how do you reach detente with different groups of people, especially on an issue like this?
My solution is to educate as many as possible. And frankly, when I wrote the book, I didn't think we were going to convince the people that are truly on the far end of the spectrum with respect to cat advocacy. But there's a lot of people out there that love cats that understand that there's an issue here that we need to solve. And I think we are starting to solve it. I think I'm seeing more people with cats on leashes. I'm seeing more people with putting cats in catios. I'm seeing more and more communities now that are starting to question this idea of, is trap neuter return the best solution here?
And a catio is what?
A catio is pretty much, it's an outdoor enclosure. And if people feel like they really want to enrich their cat's life by putting it outside, they can put it into an outdoor enclosure, basically a screened-in porch kind of a thing, where that cat will be stimulated by the outdoor environment. And I love the idea. I think it's fantastic because then the cat's under control, it's getting enriched, and wildlife is protected.
Well, Peter Merritt, thank you so much for joining us to start the discussion.
Thanks so much.
Peter Mara is co-author of the book Cat Wars, The Devastating Consequences of a Cuddly Killer. And we now welcome Katie Lisnick to Radio Times. Katie is director of cat protection and policy at the Humane Society of the United States. Welcome, Katie.
Hi there. How are you doing today?
Well, thank you. So before we get to some of what Peter Mara has said, tell us about your take on the feral cat population in this country. It's estimated there are tens of millions of free-ranging cats that don't have homes. How did we get here?
Well, we got here from kind of a number of different ways. Cats can thrive very well in many environments across the country, and they are, you know, an animal that can reproduce fairly rapidly. So when they're out in the environment and have food, have shelter, have the resources they need, we're seeing a lot of kittens being born. Historically, cats were seen as outdoor animals that would do rodent control or help people. That's why they were originally domesticated. And so we've kind of continued that trend. It's really only been recently, over the past maybe 60 years, that keeping cats indoors really became much of a thing. So we really tend to see a lot of cats outdoors and without really ready access to spay neuter services, they're, you know, left intact and they're able to reproduce.
And so again, how would you characterize the effect outside cats have on other species?
Well, they absolutely can have an impact. It is variable, and we feel that sometimes it can be a bit exaggerated, but that's not as much the point as the acknowledgement that they do cause concerns. The Humane Society of the United States protects all animals. We care about wildlife. We care about companion animals. We care about farm animals. We care about the community that folks are living in and that animals are living in. And so anytime that we have conflicting species out in the environment, we want to work to find the most humane solutions to protect them all.
Right. Well, culling cat populations, what is the Humane Society's position on that?
We do not believe that lethal control is the correct strategy. We believe that trap, neuter, and return is a tool that needs to be part of our toolbox, amongst many other things. Education and information being provided to cat owners, readily available and accessible spay-neuter services, creative cat behavior and enrichment to help people bring more cats indoors. All of these and many, many more collaborative efforts are all part and parcel of what needs to be done in communities to get more cats in homes and more cats off the streets.
Well, managing cat colonies, let's get to that in just a moment. And as a matter of fact, we have a bad phone line, obviously. So what we're going to do is switch Katie Lisnek to a better line. And while we're doing that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read some of the comments that have come in, because we're taking comments at Radio Times at WHYY.org. Also tweets to at WHYY Radio Times. Monica comments, when a cat has had a bird in its claws or mouth, that bird, even if it's seemingly okay, needs to be taken to a professional rehabber for care, or it will not survive. They need antibiotics or other similar treatment. We've also got an email from Karen, who says she took in a pregnant stray, and because there were no other options, she now has 5 plus 2 others. And from Karen, it seems to be a difficult situation to manage. So just a couple of thoughts there from our listeners. And we now have Katie Lisnek back with us, and hopefully with a better phone line. How are you doing there, Katie?
I'm doing okay. Do I sound a little better now?
Oh, yes, yes. So you got a much better line. So terrific.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Great. So getting back to trap, neuter, and return. So if a person's interested in organizing an effort like this to sterilize a colony, the first hurdle to navigate is not necessarily the trapping. It's getting the human community on board. And this includes people who don't necessarily want to see a colony at their front doorstep. So how do you negotiate mm-hmm. this?
Yes, so we are huge advocates of good data collection. So first off, you really need to even know how many cats you're dealing with. Sometimes, that seems like a little bit of a silly question or a thing that you wouldn't know how many cats are out there. But, if there's a lot of black cats or cats that look similar, you might not quite be sure how many cats there truly are. So getting them onto a feeding schedule and actually figuring out how many cats you're dealing with so that you can then adequately prepare to do trap, neuter, and return successfully is one of the first things to be looking at. And then also taking a look, as you said, at your community, at your neighbors, what sort of nuisance issues are they experiencing? Are they, the cats going into their gardens and using it as a litter box? Or, is it just the cat sleeping on their car that they don't like? There are so many humane deterrents that are out there, things like little motion detector sprinklers, things that you can put in the garden that cats don't like the smell of, and so they'll stay out. You just have to talk with people, and that's kind of a big hurdle for some, and we understand that. But when you're working to protect cats in the community and wildlife, you've got to hear what people's concerns are and be able to provide information on how to help remedy the situation.
All right. We're chatting with Katie Lisnek, Director of Cat Protection and Policy at the Humane Society of the United States. We're talking about cats and helping cats get along with other populations, animal and bird populations in the neighborhood, whether it's keeping them inside, finding creative solutions, working with cat colonies, and et cetera. 888-477-9499 is the number to call. We were also talking earlier about with Peter Mara, who was author of the book, co-author of the book Cat Wars, about culling cat populations. Let's get back to trap, neuter, and return. Just how do you trap a feral cat, Katie?
Yes, so food is number one. And it's probably not surprising. Anyone who has a cat understands that they can be very food motivated, and they let you know when it's feeding time. So feral cats will be the exact same. You get them on a schedule, have them fed once a day, twice a day, whatever your capabilities are. They become used to dinner time. And then when you're actually going to be trapping, which we recommend mass trapping to be able to trap as many cats as possible in a given day over a day or two period, so that you're not having to deal with trying to catch select cats later on. You don't feed that day, so they're hungry, and they're going to be much more likely to go into the trap to get that food.
And where do you get the traps?
Yeah, you can buy, there are traps from Tomahawk Live Traps. There's True Catch Traps. There's a whole host of humane traps that are out there that are made especially for TNR services. Mm-hmm. There's different sizes. There's different styles. You just have to find what's right for you.
And so if you want to spay or neuter one of these cats, is there funding available to help with that? Because those can be pretty expensive procedures.
Absolutely. And that's one of the biggest barriers we feel to effective cat management. Increasingly, there are more and more affordable spay-neuter services. There are more and more organizations like Petco Foundation and PetSmart Charities that are giving out grants to help bring down the cost of spay-neuter, because that is absolutely a barrier for folks. If you're feeding a few cats in your backyard, it's not like we all have tons of disposable income to just go and pay hundreds of dollars on a cat spay or neuter. So providing that accessible and affordable spay-neuter service is hugely important. Mm-hmm. On our website, humanesociety.org, we actually have a listing of organizations around the country where you can sort by state and see where there are local shelters or animal control agencies or what have you that are providing low-cost surgery options.
So, Katie, if a person isn't interested in pursuing trap, neuter, and return, but, there's a stray cat visiting in the yard, do you recommend feeding that cat?
What we first recommend is asking around your neighborhood. And again, sometimes that can be a little uncomfortable. Sometimes some of us don't know our neighbors, but think of it as an opportunity to get to know some friendly folks. So more than likely, that cat is probably owned by someone and just happens to wander around looking for, a handout. As we've mentioned earlier, cats are pretty food motivated, and they're not going to turn down dinner number two at the next door neighbor's house if some is put out. So you can be asking around, seeing who that cat belongs to. And if you find out that it is truly a stray, then look into, perhaps taking in that cat yourself and adopting, or seeing if someone else on the street would be interested in bringing that cat into their home, or what your local shelter or rescue has available for resources to be able to help rehome the friendly cat.
All right, we're looking at cats and their impacts on other species, bird species, small mammals, reptiles, etc. This hour of Radio Times, our guest for the rest of the hours, Katie Lisnick of the Humane Society of the United States. We're taking calls at 888-477-9499. More just ahead. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Katie Lisnick is with us. She is Director of Cat Protection and Policy at the Humane Society of the United States. And before we get back to the phones, so Katie, characterize your take on the impact of cats on songbirds, on mice, other small mammals, and reptiles.
Absolutely. We do feel like they do have certain impacts in certain areas. There are an awful lot of studies out there that are giving us a piece of the puzzle. Many of them are based on very small sample sizes and have been extrapolated up in ways that may not give us a real full picture of what's going on and may exaggerate some of the information that's out there. But we do feel it is a problem overall, and we always are encouraging more data collection, more and better research into the area so we can truly determine what is predation versus what is true population impact. And they are quite different. If they're predating upon a species that is fairly common and they're not having a population level impact and driving that population down, it's not as much of a concern as with threatened and endangered species that are or could be being impacted. We are working with a number of wildlife scientists to try to ensure that TNR groups are collecting the right data. They are looking at doing some cat counting in their communities to determine how many cats there actually are, which we really don't have a good picture of yet. And looking at taking some of the wildlife counting strategies that many population biologists have been doing and start applying them to cats, because the information and the tools to try it are out there. and the animal welfare field is just a little bit behind the times in accepting and trying some of those, which we are trying to foster in our field much more.
All right. Barbara in Montgomery County is standing by. She joins us now on Radio Times. Hello, Barbara.
Hello. So I have a lovely cat that comes around to visit me. And sometimes I look at this animal and think, this is a pretty animal, this is a friendly animal, and it's helping rid my property of mice and rats and snakes. But sometimes I think, this is an animal that's spreading histoplasmosis, which is dangerous to my pregnant niece, and is killing birds. I don't know which is true, and I'm suspecting that both are true at the same time. Help me clarify.
Thank you, Barbara, for the calls. So, for the call to Radio Times. So, a couple different things there. First of all, let's talk about disease that stray cats can transmit. Peter Mara referenced that briefly earlier in the show. So, tell us a little bit about that, Katie Lisnick.
Certainly, and you know, any animal can spread disease. There are certain zoonotic diseases that do spread between cats and humans, and there are other diseases that can spread between cats. And their own population. So, you know, we feel like overall the strategy to reduce the number of outdoor cats, which we feel trap, neuter, return is the appropriate way to do so. But above all, our goal is to reduce the number of outdoor cats, which is going to then reduce any welfare concerns. It is going to reduce public health concerns. It is going to reduce wildlife predation concerns because there are fewer cats overall. You know, we absolutely acknowledge that there are disease concerns, and we do feel that the toxoplasmosis issue can be a bit overblown. You know, the number one way that people get toxoplasmosis is actually through undercooked meat. Cats are the definitive host, which means they are the only animal, actually the whole felid species group is able to have the Toxoplasma gondii, a parasite, reproduce in its digestive tract, and they do shed the oocysts into the environment. So that's how it's spread. But toxo is a very prevalent organism that stays in the environment for a long time. So even if you had a magic wand and made all of the cats disappear right now, toxo would still be around with us for a very long time to come. And the other interest. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, you know, Barbara also was wondering, how do you know if it's killing birds along with, you know, the mice and other creatures that you might want to be rid of? And I know Peter touched on this, but if you could give us a little bit more information.
Absolutely. So, you know, we know that cats do predate upon animals. They are a predator. They are a carnivore. So they are going to be killing animals and eating them. That's their natural instinct. And we can channel that, you know, for our own pets. We can give them toys and things to play with inside and, you know, fulfill that hunting instinct. But when they're outside, they're going to go after small animals, be that rodents, reptiles, birds, what have you. The real question becomes, though, you know, are they catching the occasional starling or, you know, a bird that's very prevalent or a mouse and actually kind of helping to keep a rodent population down? Versus are they, you know, targeting a specifically vulnerable species and actually we're collecting data to show that the population is declining. There are numerous studies that say that cats are probably more likely to be catching ill, injured, and sick animals because they are slower and easier to catch. And so it's kind of more compensatory mortality as opposed to additive, but they're taking animals that would be dying of other causes anyway. So you really need to, you know, predation is one thing, but population impact is something very different.
All right. Let's go to Terry in Philadelphia. Welcome to Radio Times, Terry.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering if there would be any formal advocating for laws requiring cats to be licensed as dogs are, and that they cannot just roam freely in the streets, but would, if they're outside, would say require a leash, like just be to be have the same requirements as dogs.
All right, thanks for the comment to Radio Times. You know, not the first time I've heard this, Katie Lisnick. You know, dogs are their regulations. Dogs have to be registered and licensed, and why not cats?
Sure. So historically, looking at animal control laws, most laws were created in the first place for dogs because they are, I don't want to say more dangerous, but there's a greater risk. You know, packs of dogs running around a community, there's a risk for disease transmission, but also a risk for attacks, bites, and things like that. So animal control, as it started, you know, a couple hundred years ago, really focused on the public health concerns around packs of stray dogs running around. So that's why in many communities you do see dog licensing, you see at-large laws, you see leash laws, things like that. So cats, as I had said before, you know, there's a slower peak of cats becoming companion animals and starting to be really prevalent in our communities and viewed differently than just as, you know, animals that kind of ran around and caught mice and rats for us. So we've seen, you know, through that over the past several decades, a number of communities have enacted things like cat licensing, cat leash laws, and all that to really varying levels of success. For the most part, they have failed to do what they were intended to do, which was reduce the population of cats. The enforcement of these laws is extremely difficult, and nobody has, no municipality has enough animal control staff time to be out, you know, following a cat around, figuring out where it belongs, and really doing that. And the shelters, the communities that have ended up rounding up cats for the most part, have just set themselves up for large-scale euthanasia and, you know, ongoing reproduction. So they really haven't gotten out under the issue of too many unowned cats running around.
All right. Let's get to Diane in Glenside. Diane, you're also live on Radio Times. Hello.
Yes, hi. Thank you for having me on. I've caught a lot of cats this past year. When we moved into Glenside, we had no idea that there wasn't anything placed in our local government, to any budget to be put aside to address this. It was really in suburbia. It's an owner, you know, homeowner by homeowner problem. And that when we discovered kittens under our porch, I was able to trap many of them with a small trap, and they're easily placed when they're in shelters, feral cats or not. And I am a converted now after listening to the author, because I believe that releasing them back into the neighborhood, I saw one actually killed in the road later, a few months later. And I also saw evidence of blue jays killed by cats in my yard.
So, Diane, and when you say you're converted, just because we're a little bit short on time, how do you mean? Converted into what
really,
are the solutions?
I think that with respect to the second speaker, that we're just really nibbling at the edges in terms of, for lack of a better expression, of what this problem is, that you have to really think about euthanizing as sort of at the top of the list with ferals. That, sadly, and I love cats, I've owned cats, sadly, the problem is too big now. And there's not, it costs a lot to spay them, to invest in a trap, to have them neutered, to release them, to make sure they're fed and not preying on birds. It's too much money for any single homeowner or group of homeowners to address. Right. And unless governments get on with the program with how to deal with these colonies, especially along public places like train tracks and areas like that, the problem that the first author addressed, it's going to just get bigger. He's looking at the bigger picture. You know,
Diane, thank you so much for the call to Radio Times. So Katie Lisnick, nibbling around the edges here of a huge problem?
Well, you're right. It is a huge problem. And that caller hit upon, you know, the issue on the head of how society wants to deal with this issue. So we can be spending money to do humane, non-lethal control, trap, neuter, return, but we have to do it really aggressively. And we have not been doing that yet. We try to encourage everybody who does the work, who is in the animal welfare field, to be really aggressive and get out there and sterilize as close to 100% of the cats in their community as they can. And she's right. It takes time. It takes money. It takes energy. Conversely, though, right now, euthanasia in shelters is performed, and it has been performed for decades and decades as a population tool, population management tool, and it has not achieved the outcome that we thought it was going to. And right now, we're down to euthanizing probably between about 3 million animals per year. And that's down, you know, by several orders of magnitude than it was even in past decades. So what we're honestly talking about would be a massive increase in the number of euthanasias that are happening in today's shelters and animal control facilities. But, you know, by, you know, an order of, you know, 10, you know, 10, a magnitude of 10, perhaps, going up to euthanizing 30 million, 40 million, however many are able to be caught. And that is going to have a huge financial burden as well as who's actually going to do it. So, you know, either way, a massive, massive increase is needed. And we feel that society is in favor, for the most part, with non-lethal control. Most people are not comfortable using euthanasia of healthy animals as a way to limit their population.
All right. So, Katie, so for those of us who are listening who are cat owners, I include myself here, and people who might be considering getting cats, what are some of the first steps to take? Never let your cat outdoors. I mean, there are some who say indoor cats are more prone to obesity and boredom and even urinary tract infections.
Absolutely. There are so many things that can be done. We always encourage adoption from your local shelter or rescue. And also, you know, adopting a cat off of the street is perfectly fine as well. And we highly encourage that too. Getting the cat sterilized, making sure that they are vaccinated against rabies and any other appropriate vaccines for your community is always great. And we do advocate for keeping cats indoors or using things creative like walking on a leash or utilizing catios, which are essentially screened-in porches, or, you know, they can be as elaborate as you want them to be, and some of them are gorgeous, to give your cat outdoor access if you choose that.
How do you walk a cat on a leash?
It takes a lot of training. Some cats really love it. Other cats are never going to be good candidates for it. So outgoing cats that are really confident and really comfortable with handling change can be really good candidates. And especially if they're highly food motivated, you can train them sometimes fairly easily to really enjoy their outdoor walks. And like I said, some cats are never going to go for that. But there are other things you can do for indoor cats, tons of enrichment. There are all sorts of feeding puzzles that mimic them having to hunt and catch something in order to eat. There are toys that they can play with. There are a bunch of things that people can do to keep the cat happy and healthy while still living an indoor lifestyle.
All right, we've got time for one more call. Amy in Westchester, Pennsylvania, welcome to Radio Times.
Oh, thanks, Mary. Listen, I consider myself a dyed-in-the-wool cat lover. We currently have three rescues. But last spring, we did have a feral cat, and our rescues do go out on the patio. They love it, and I would never just leave them indoors, just like my dog gets to go outside and my kids get to go outside. Cats really love to be outdoors. But we had a feral cat that was just vicious and attacked one of my older cats. And it was really then, like your previous caller, that it struck me, you know, we trapped the cat, we took it to the SPCA, and I was shocked when they said they were going to re-release this cat back where we trapped it, which essentially was in my backyard. And, you know, it just seems to me that we've got to be more practical about this. This was a vicious cat. It's never going to be adopted. There are millions of cats at rescues, in pet stores with rescues that need homes. And I think what we said before, you know, we have got to attack this problem. And this vicious feral cat, as a cat lover, I can say I would have had no problem putting that cat down.
All right, Amy, we're about out of time. I've got to give Katie a chance to respond. But thank you for the call to Radio Times. We appreciate the insight. Katie, you've got about 30 seconds. How do you respond to Amy's story?
Well, we do not say that euthanasia is never the appropriate outcome. There can be certain circumstances where it is appropriate. However, the sheer number and the sheer volume of the number of the cats that would need to be euthanized in order to use that as a population measure, we feel is not what's going to be right for our society. We also don't feel that cat wars is the appropriate term. We can be cat collaborative, and we can figure out common ground that we all have, and we feel like we can work together to find a better way forward.
All right. On that note, Katie Lisnick, it was great to have you along for Radio Times.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Katie Lisnick is Director of Cat Protection and Policy at the Humane Society of the United States. And don't forget to visit our Facebook page and podcasts. Simply head to whyy.org/Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. As always, thanks for joining us for Radio Times.
Thank you.